You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Screen Heroes. My name is Ray, and I am joined by my two very wonderful hosts, Ryan.
Hi.
And Derek.
Yo.
How are you guys?
Fine.
Yeah. Cool.
Just fine.
Pretty awesome. Normal.
Awesome.
Fine. Everything's fine here.
All right, then. Okay. Well, off to a great start. So I do want to personally apologize. Last week we missed an episode. I had a very horrific hospital stay. So we're not going to go into details, but it was a shitty week last week. We skipped things. That does mean I did not get to see It too. So we're not reviewing it. We are finally doing our martial arts episode.
Woo. 3 years later.
Yeah, Ryan requested this episode back in 1995, and we're just now finally getting to it.
Yeah, Derek and Rachel finally had time to watch some martial arts movies. They found time in their busy schedule.
It's funny because it's true.
Yeah.
It's only a little exaggerated.
No, I'm excited. It's a genre that I personally have a pretty big attachment to, so, you know, it's something I've wanted to do for a long time.
Which genre was it again?
Spaghetti westerns.
That's
spaghetti
right.
Westerns. That's right.
I love spaghetti westerns.
Yeah, martial arts films.
Yeah. I've Kung Fu movies.
Yeah, I had seen martial arts films outside of sure. this podcast, but
you know, this brought your attention to someone that I think you very much enjoyed, and we'll get to talk about those.
Yeah, and you know, we wanted to prepare for this too because it's not something that I watch as heavily as like superhero movies. So when we pick like a ranking of the MCU, that's a lot easier for me to do off the cuff. You know,
Is the term spaghetti western racist? Because, like, it's supposed to be a western that's done by an Italian director. That's racist, right?
I mean, everybody likes spaghetti. I don't know what the problem is.
I don't know enough about the term. It depends, I guess, who created the term and why, how they were using it. Like,
it was created
by the Italian directors, it's fine.
I think it was describing Sergio Leone's films.
That's racist, then.
Well, I want it to be known that Rachel was the one that used that term, not me.
Yes. Rachel's also Italian. I get, like, a slight pass. So it's not a great pass, but, you know. Anyway, let's do this. So we got a little bit of news. First of all, I'm going to hand it over to Ryan because he's seen it. The Titans season 2 debuted.
Yeah, week. Kind of out of the blue. There wasn't really a lot of advertising. I got some Facebook ads for it, but I completely forgot about it. And then one of our friends was like, hey, Titans episode 1 season 2 dropped. Did anybody watch it? And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I should watch that.
Yeah, how was it?
It should have been the finale of last season like it was originally intended to be. If you don't know, they made, I think it was 11 episodes last season.
Yeah.
They were going to do 12, but then they cut off the last episode and made it the first episode of this season, which upon watching, there's a scene of a lot of CGI, and I wonder if that maybe didn't go quite as quickly as they thought it would, so that was where the decision came from.
That's a fair point.
So you think maybe it wasn't done in time.
Right. Having watched the episode, that's the only reason why I could think of why they would have done it, because it was such a better way to end the season, or would have been such a better way to end the season than it was to start the season.
So that's really interesting, because I have not seen the season premiere yet, so I had taken the finale for season 1 much more cynical and thought they were doing it to just bait people to keep their subscriptions and watch the next season.
I don't think that's what it was. Okay. I mean, remember what happened at the end of last season, you can probably figure out where the CGI went based on the characters in that scene.
Yeah, that's fair.
And yeah, I think that's probably why.
Well, okay. I mean, I can appreciate that, because if they had shown what they had, it would have been terrible, and we would have been talking about how awful the finale looked. And,
right.
You know, that may have hurt the chances of it actually getting a second season.
It might have. But yeah, I mean, it was a great, it was even on as a premiere, it was a great episode. It was, it really set up the rest of the season when it should have been a tease for what's coming last season. But yeah, it was enjoyable. I think you guys will like it when you get around to watching it.
Good.
Next up, a couple Margot Robbie news. First of all, not much to really share, but her production company not her, her production company has optioned for a
Every news outlet is saying it's gotta be her. So
I had to dig through the news articles, but no, it's her production company. So her money's behind it, or at least her, I guess, force, her name, her whatever. But there's nothing saying that she's going to play Tank Girl. If she does, that would be pretty cool. She's rounding herself out to be like a new queen of the nerds, which I love. But, you know, right now
she's going to start pigeonholing herself if she's not careful.
That's possible.
I don't know. I mean, she's done Oscar-worthy material.
Done, but I'm based on what's coming is looking
maybe she
like
prefers it.
I think it's a good, right now what she's doing is Oscar movie, blockbuster. Oscar movie, blockbuster. It's a decent pattern, and I think she can keep it up because she has Bombshell coming out, and then she also is doing Birds of Prey, Suicide Squad 2, the Barbie movie, and now her production company is doing Tank Girl.
Suicide Squad 2, has she?
Well, officially, no one's been confirmed for Suicide Squad 2, so we can kind of leave that up in the air. But again, Birds of Prey and the Barbie movie, she's definitely starring in. So.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, she just might be having more fun doing those roles, you know?
Right.
It's not, you know, she may not be as interested in the Oscar Beatty material, and she's just enjoying what she's doing. I don't know. But, you know, her production company, though, like, we don't know how much creative control she individually will have. Of course, she's probably responsible for most of the hirings at the company, so there's that. But, you know, there's a lot of production companies out there that are owned by people that don't actually end up in the studio during, you know, a film or something like that. So, but maybe she'll handle it the way Vin Diesel's production company handled Riddick, you know, and it's his production company and he's the lead. You know, that's very possible, too. So
totally. Yeah. So speaking of her and Birds of Prey, kind of it was such a small teaser. It's not a real trailer at all. Came out ahead of it this past weekend.
And it was even less than the thing that they showed before, which was already not much.
Yeah.
But this was officially on the big screen.
Officially on the big screen, and it was, you know, you got to see Harley Quinn actually acting like the character, even though it wasn't a part of the movie. It was her intro to the sizzle reel or whatever. You got to see her in character for it. So if that's your thing, then you might have enjoyed it. But
I'm still waiting on more from it.
It's really
want
disappointing
to see a real
that we
trailer.
Haven't seen more.
Yeah,
Black Canary is one of my favorite characters. I just want to see Black Canary like do something, and all you get to see is like a flash of her kicking,
a flash of Huntress, and a flash of Ewan McGregor's black mask, and that's really
not
it.
Even wearing the mask.
Yeah,
so.
They're obviously waiting for Joker.
It seems likely
that's what they're waiting for because the movie's not that far off Birds of Prey, so they have to have something ready, you know, more or less.
And why not put it with
an
Oscar Beatty movie?
Well, they wrapped a while ago, so post-production's been going for a while.
Well, not just an Oscar Beatty movie, but one in-universe by your own production company.
It's not in-universe, it's a different universe.
It's still a DC universe, Worlds of DC film.
I mean, it's more connected than it, so, that's all.
Like,
I get what you're saying.
The demographic crossover is probably larger for Joker than it is for It, which is still, I mean, I'm not saying it would be small for It, but even more so.
Speaking of It, I don't know if you have the box office numbers, but it blew up this weekend.
Did.
It didn't do as well as the first one, but it's one of the biggest horror releases ever.
Yeah, I mean, it did well. So obviously it won the box office. It brought home $91 million. There wasn't a whole lot of competition, though. Like, I don't even know what this other movie is that released. It's called Chichori. It made $600,000.
Good for it.
Came in 19th. I don't know what it is. But it beat out Angel Has Fallen, which took second place, which has been out for 3 weeks. Like, that was its biggest competition. So
Gerard Butler's still acting, guys. Did you know that?
So it brought in $190.5 million worldwide. So it's actually almost a 50-50 split, which is impressive. Yeah. Like, that's good to see. And
who knows, we may see it this weekend or
I mean, that's definitely possible. But I mean, comparatively though, I mean, the first chapter made $123.4 million opening weekend in fewer theaters, so the drive or the interest was lower for whatever reason. I don't really have an explanation for you now, but
mostly positive reviews, with the only drawback I'm hearing from everyone big critics and friends and everything that it was just way too long, that you could have cut up to almost an hour of content, which is kind of crazy considering it's close to 3 hours.
And that's a good point. And maybe that's part of it. The runtime for the original was 2 hours and 15 minutes versus It Chapter 2's runtime comes in at 2 hours and 49 minutes.
That's incredible.
So it means that even though it's in more theaters, it can't be shown as many times per day. So yeah, that could increase that, or I mean, decrease its ticket sales. And people may not want to, not as many people may want to sit through a 3 hour movie, right? People did it for Endgame, but it was also, you know, a decade in the making,
right?
So the push to go be in the theater to see that was larger.
Yeah, I'll be curious to hear what you guys think of it when you see it, if you agree definitely with me, or if you don't.
We usually do. I mean, at this point, we've seen so many movies together that we're rarely like dissonance. Disney has scrapped Josh Gad's Muppets project, which was going to be on Disney Plus. So it's the first thing canceled from Disney Plus.
I'm really disappointed because, so Disney, or not Disney, excuse me, Muppets Live, the unscripted Muppets show, is still in going forward in production.
Yes.
But I was really looking forward to this one because this is actually was supposed to be a sequel to Muppets Take Manhattan. Like, follow up.
Oh, that stinks. That's my favorite Muppets movie.
And it was going to be scripted, which personally, I am more confident in something like that being good over time. And I like Josh Gad. And so I'm sure the articles I read said creative differences between them and the people running the Henson Company. So that's not a good sign either.
No.
So I don't know. I would love to, we're never going to know, but I would love to know what those disagreements were.
It's important to note that the people in charge of the Muppet stuff also made that terrible, terrible puppet movie with you puppets jizzing all over the place.
Right. Yeah.
So
what was that called? Happy Fun Time Murders.
Yeah.
You know, so it's important to keep in mind that as much as I want to hate Disney, it's not always their fault, and this one could have easily been something that none of us would have wanted anyway.
Well, I'm not blaming Disney. If the Jim Henson Company and the creators of the show couldn't agree on something, Disney may have just said, okay, well, then we're just going to put this on hold and come back with something else.
So I'm just going to flat out say that, like, I don't think Disney has ever known what to do with the Muppets, because aside from merchandising and the 2010 movie with Jason Segel,
that was a good one.
I think that most of their properties have been pretty poorly received, pretty badly adapted. Muppet, like, talk to some, like, young millennials, Gen Zers or whatever, and they just adore Muppet Treasure Planet. And I'm like, but did you see the ones before it? Like, or Muppet Treasure Island. I'm like, that one just blows compared to some of the others. And
well, the new Muppet Baby show is supposedly very good.
That's fair. None of us have small children, so no, we don't really watch it.
But it's supposed to be really quite good. I've seen some reports of it being better than the original and stuff like that. But how long has Disney owned the Henson Company? It's been a
since
long time,
Muppet
right?
Christmas Carol.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know that they've never known what to do with the franchise. I think that...
I think they go through slumps, because honestly, I think Muppets from Space and Muppet Wizard of Oz and Muppets Most Wanted and the Muppet Office TV show, it was just
the more recent one, you mean?
Yeah, they all just kind of missed the mark. They're all just like short of the Muppet greatness. Now, I will give it to them, Muppet Christmas Carol and the Muppet movie that Jason Segel did were fantastic, but it's only like a hint of what Henson did with it. It's
they should probably just reboot the actual Muppet show in that similar format.
That's
just
what
with
I want.
Bits,
the variety, you know, show, when they did that in the 90s, it was so good.
Yeah. I mean,
so good.
I think that has the best chance of succeeding. I think the problem with the show they did a few years ago, that was kind of like the documentary style show. The problem with that was they wanted to make the Muppets for adults, but for the kids that grew up with the Muppets, so us, and it was just cynical and dark, and they were trying to be edgy, and it was depressing, and there was nothing, it wasn't joyful, and the Muppets have always kind of been something positive and joyful, even though, you know, there's been some negative stuff. So
Yeah, absolutely. So I just want the Muppets to figure, or Disney or Henson or someone to figure out what to do with it, because it just bothers me a lot. Let's see here. This weekend was Salt Lake City's Fan X, or it used to be Salt Lake City Comic Con, and Disney shut down a Star Wars panel with Ian McDiarmid and Hayden Christensen.
I saw an article come up about it, but I didn't read it. Did you have any more information on that?
They did it before the two of them even started the panel. It was done about, I want to say, like 20, 30 minutes before the panel was supposed to start. So people were outside waiting. The two of them have been appearing at cons a lot. So a lot of people are suspecting Rise of Skywalker.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's it.
I did see something about that.
Honestly, I would be more upset that every single fan would get up there and troll and just say the sand line over and over again. Like,
well, I mean, I'm sure he gets that at cons.
I'm sure he gets that from a lot of people.
I know that he has had problems, like mental problems, doing cons for a while, and so has the young Anakin.
Oh yeah, Jake Lloyd.
So you know, I thought it was more related to that, maybe, that they were just like burned out and couldn't do it or something, but who knows? It seems more likely that they were worried about spoilers.
Yeah.
I guess we could talk about Apple's news today real quick.
Apple is doing Apple TV finally. They have come up with their own streaming service.
Well, so it's called Apple TV Plus.
Sure.
Well, I don't want to confuse people because Apple TV is already a thing.
Right. You can watch TV on your device. Yeah. It's just like Apple Podcasts and Apple Music. And But they have two shows that are debuting, C and Dickinson.
Yeah. I mean, so the short of it is it's a pretty limited thing at this point in time. It definitely doesn't have the massive lineup that Disney Plus has, or, you know, Netflix or Hulu have, or anything like that. It's definitely more in line with, say, a CBS All Access.
Right.
Right. But it's $4.99 a month. It launches November 1st, which I'm sure is not an accident, since Disney Plus comes out on November 12th. I'm sure that's very much on purpose. If you purchase a new iOS device or a macOS device, you will get a year of it for free. If you already have one of those, too bad. And like everything Apple, it's only going to run on iOS and macOS devices. So if you don't have one of those, you can't watch the stuff anyway, which makes this service pretty not interesting to me. Now, there are some reports that says that the Apple TV app will become available this year on other devices, including Roku and Amazon Fire TV, including other smart televisions. So I guess we'll have to wait and see if that's true. I would be very surprised.
You could always just torrent it, because that's clearly what Apple wants you to do.
We do not endorse torrenting.
We do not endorse that, but I want it to be noted that Apple is forcing people to do that by making it so you can only access this on iOS devices.
I mean, you guys heard my complaints for the DC Universe when it first launched, that it was like almost impossible to actually watch it because the app wasn't available on anything, right? This is the same kind of concept. You know, I've got an Xbox, a PS4, an app, an Amazon Fire TV.
You're loaded.
Like, yeah, he tries to show off every time.
I just mean
weird
that,
flex,
like,
bro.
No, what I mean is, it's not like I've got a Roku stick from 6 years ago and that's all I'm streaming on. Like, I have a lot of devices to stream on, and if your thing isn't on that, then I guess I'm just not going to watch it, no matter what it is. And I like Jason Momoa, so that's a little disappointing.
Yeah, the Emily Dickinson show actually looks really good, and I'd be interested in watching it. But, you know, fuck me running. I'm not going to get to, and I'm not going to go out and pay for it at this point.
You're not going to go buy an iPad?
No. God, no. It's not going to happen. Not going to happen. Last bit of news, and then we'll move on to martial arts movies. Sony has officially stated that Spider-Man is out of the MCU for the time being, They do promise new Spider-Man movies. They promise team-ups with the people that they've already introduced. So probably looking at Spider-Man, Tom Holland version, I guess, into the Spider-Verse kind of universe. And then a team-up with Tom Hardy, which would be fantastic, because watching the two of them interact, I can't imagine, like, if Tom Hardy is still his sweaty, gross self in Venom 2, and then you have precious baby Tom Holland, like, it's like an anime. I would love it.
I saw somebody post this online that Sony should call their new Spider-Man movie, the third one, they should just call it Spider-Man Coming Home. And I thought that would be hilarious. Actually, I fully endorse that decision.
Oh boy!
Or Spider-Man Comes Home, I think is what
it seems like a good way to never work with Disney again.
Really, Spider-Man, though, they have Spider-Man, so that's a good way to like maybe piss off some people at Disney. But Disney's never going to say, "Fine, we're never going to touch Spider-Man again." That sentence is never going to be written anywhere.
I don't know. People get really weird with their business and being vindictive. So,
of course, they do. But it's Spider-Man, like literally clearly Marvel's they don't need number Spider-Man. One property. So
but they still make money on all the toys. So ultimately, they would just get money for whatever Sony does.
That's true. So maybe they wouldn't be so mad. Then.
That's true. Yeah. They could use the money to stuff in their pillows so they sleep better.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel so bad for them.
Yes, it must be difficult. Hopefully it's all in bills. Otherwise, it's going to get really uncomfortable sleeping on coins, gold coins.
And loud.
Yeah,
every time
true.
You kind of adjust your head, you know.
What if it makes a Mario noise every time you hit one of the coins? So it'd be a long night.
How many Disney executives do you think have the swimming pool of gold coins?
I mean, I would say everyone on the board of directors,
right?
Yeah.
How many of them do you think own islands that already had people on them?
People for hunting. They like to drug them a little bit so that they can't get away as fast.
Just wear something brightly colored. Yeah, exactly. And I think that dude wants to hunt me.
Parks and Rec reference.
Anyway,
Disney is a mess and we're going to make fun of them because we're so addicted. They make so much of our favorite content and we can't help but give them more of our money. But at the same time, we know they're evil.
Yes.
Well, it just means, look yeah, I'm going to watch The Mandalorian and Captain Falcon and the Winter Soldier. But I'm also not going to feel bad that Sony's keeping their character.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to feel bad about that.
Nope.
So
it's amazing how fast the internet came back from blaming Sony to blaming Disney. Like, there was a complete reversal within 24 hours.
Yeah, that happened quicker than I anticipated.
The Stan Lee's daughter news coming out was really like, Sony was, I mean, I don't think they set that up, but that
if
couldn't
they
have
did,
happened
man.
At a better time.
Yeah, somebody was really happy when that news broke.
Oh, yeah. But, and somebody was really unhappy when that news broke, too. They were using the money to dry away their tears over at Disney.
Just the $1 bills.
Right, yeah.
Oh, what else no do you bills. Use those for?
Vending machines.
That's true, vending machines.
Not yeah. you. I know what you
no,
use.
Everybody uses them for vending machines. Look, you could be a billionaire, but if you want a Snickers bar out of a vending machine, you're
no,
probably
the vending
using
machines
a $1
at Disney
bill.
Use the tears of their employees that
That's
are
true.
Underpaid.
Oh, man. Yeah.
The Disney.
The animators.
This is taking a turn. I just want to make some Spider-Man
The
jokes.
People that work at the parks get like $6 an hour and they are all from the Ukraine. And
That's
I feel
right.
so bad for them.
All right.
Their
tears
power the ride.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back for more martial arts stuff.
It looks like it's a spellhound.
You say spellhound. Hello, everyone. This is Ray from the Heroes Podcast Network. Currently, you've probably heard me on a show called Screen Heroes, where we discuss movies and TV shows about superheroes, sci-fi, and a little bit of fantasy. Well, I love fantasy so much, I am starting a brand new podcast about fantasy television series. We are going to review these series in a bit more detail than what Screen Heroes usually does. We'll discuss multiple episodes for a whole continuous arc and then move on to another series. Spellbound will review shows, new shows like The Witcher, Good Omens, Carnival Row, and Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. We're also going to look back at previous shows such as American Gods and Avatar the Last Airbender, old miniseries from the 90s like Leprechauns and the 10th Kingdom, and we're going to do a movie here and there, maybe even a little bit of fantasy upcoming news, who knows. You'll be able to follow Spellbound at SpellboundCast on Twitter for the latest fantasy news about the show, about the upcoming shows that we'll be discussing. You can also listen to us Fridays, coming in September. Hey everyone, welcome back. We are now going to talk about, martial arts movies, all those wonderful films. Ryan, what do you look for in a good martial arts movie?
There's a lot of things. I mean, you can have like a bad movie that's really good martial arts movie.
Okay.
I feel like a lot of them are that way.
Okay.
I think the important part of any martial arts movie is obviously the martial arts and the choreography.
Good.
Whoa. But you can have movies like, I don't know, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon that's an Oscar contender, but then also debatably good martial arts choreography in it.
Well, that was one of the movies that we particularly watched. And I will say, when the trailer came out, I remember I was very young, the trailer came out, and the American trailer was only the wire work and like the fighting. And when you watch the movie, it's like a 2-hour movie, and the martial arts is not the forefront. I would even argue that it's not a martial arts film. It's a drama with martial arts in the background. Yeah.
Well, let's get technical up in here.
That's your thing. That's what
it
you
is,
do.
It is. So I'm not going to read this entire definition from encyclopedia.com.
Very happy with that.
Way too long. But I just want to grab a couple of things here. So there's the obvious. And this is actually how it starts. In common parlance, martial arts refers to Asian martial arts, judo, karate, kung fu, taekwondo. But down here it says, thus, the martial arts genre is derived from Asian films that focus on the skills, exploits, and philosophies revolving around these particular fighting styles when employed by various recurring figures. And so it's the philosophy aspect of it that I think is really important. Like, yes, there are martial arts films like The Raid that are really just a bunch of fight sequences, but you also have more philosophical, more cerebral films like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon that focus on the cultural aspects, the philosophical aspects, the meaning behind the martial arts, and when to use it versus when not to use it. And I think that's just as important.
Sure. And I appreciate both of those types of movies. If I was to make a list of my top 10 martial arts movies, a lot of them would be non-cerebral, just purely action movies.
Sure.
Because I think it's its own art, mm-hmm. doing something like that, even though it's maybe not taken as seriously by like the Academy Awards and awards companies. They don't even have stunt ones anymore.
It's very obvious that stunts need to be part of the Academy Awards.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So, there's definitely like subgenres in martial arts movies.
And, well, and certainly, just like any genre has subgenres. Exactly. I mean, we watched a martial arts children's film. We watched a...
I don't know.
It's a children's film,
I certainly think that the trilogy that follows it is children's film stuff.
But. Whatever. Anyway, we watched comedy. We watched drama. And we watched...
romance. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon could arguably be a romance.
Yeah, there are two simultaneous romances playing out, though.
I mean, basically the whole movie happens because of romance. The sword is just the MacGuffin.
I'll say that one of my biggest pet peeves in martial arts movies, and unfortunately it's pretty common anymore, is wire work. When I started watching martial arts movies when I was a kid, I loved seeing what the human body was capable of when put to use by somebody that had such control. They could do these amazing things. And when you start adding wire work into it, even with the same actors, I feel like that lessens the entire fight scene that it's in. And Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was one of the first ones where it just annoyed me. And I think it's a great movie. And that part doesn't bother as many people as much as it bothers me. But That is not one of my favorite martial arts movies because of that.
I can completely see that. And like, it got to be the point, or is a little bothersome to watch, because the rooftop and the tree scenes felt elongated for no reason. It wasn't elongated because the story or the film called for it. It was because the wires took a long time to get from point A to point B. And I felt like all those scenes could have been better choreographed if the wires weren't as involved. They could have still achieved some of that stuff without all of it. It's like they use it
as a crutch, right?
It felt like that.
Like, well, they make it easier to get the scene in two takes rather than do it 20 times like in an old Jackie Chan movie. They get to use one take out of 30 takes because he can't do it every time because it's such an impossible thing to do.
I think there are movies that do it for that reason. I don't think Crouching Tiger is one of those. I think Ang Lee was specifically doing it for the artistic style. I'm not saying that it worked or didn't work. I'm just saying I don't think it was used as a crutch. I think it was used as a creative decision.
Sure.
Ang Lee really isn't
in, yes. in that movie.
Yeah. He's like an artsy fartsy kind of director.
Like, I like 90% of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and I like the wire work in that 90%. I don't like it at the end when they are fighting in the trees.
They're like bamboo trees or whatever they are.
Yeah, because it, and maybe it's because, you know, this film was shot in 1999 and it was one of the first to really use wires like this in this way, that it just, it doesn't age very well. It looks awkward when they're doing it. It looks fake when they're doing it versus earlier on when they're doing like, they're running up the walls and they're going across the roof. It looks more like a dance. Mm-hmm. Then it looks fake, right? It looks more like they're doing a ballet or something like that. And I think then it works, and maybe it's because it's dark. It hides its age better, maybe. I don't know. I didn't watch it in 4K or anything. But, you know, I mean, Hero has some of that too, but they balance it because it's not only that type of martial arts.
Right, and even movies that that you guys watch, like Ip Man, do use, there's clear wire work in some scenes in that movie, and it bothered me in there too. So I mean, yeah, it wasn't done for an artistic reason in Ip Man. It was done for an artistic reason in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, for sure. The worst offender is when they like jump and then there's no weight to that jump. Like, you can tell, you know, when they, like a baby's in one of those chairs and they bounce up and down in it. It has like the bungee cords. That's what it looks like to me. Like, there's, this doesn't look like a real jump because there's no weight when they land. Like, the Matrix sequels, I think, that had that a few times where he would jump in the air and then it was like there was no weight to his character at all because of the wires and stuff like that. Yeah. It's the little subtleties that really, like,
well,
hurt me.
Yeah, I part of the Matrix problems were the CGI work wasn't really ready yet for it either. So actually, it's an interesting question because I'm not sure how to answer it myself. Is what happens in the Matrix martial arts? Is that a martial arts film in any way?
He flat out says he knows kung fu.
It's a joke. Just because a film has fight scenes doesn't mean it's a martial arts movie.
Even though
I think it leads more with sci-fi. I think that's the prominent genre for it. And you could do martial arts and, oh, I imagine a few other genres would be like underneath the sci-fi umbrella, but I wouldn't call it a martial arts.
Just because a character uses martial arts, and there's a lot of character, you know, Daredevil uses martial arts. That's not a martial arts show.
I've
like
seen
that.
It on some lists and I thought it was odd.
I'm sure people could classify it as that. It's like saying Ghostbusters is a horror movie, you know. It's, I guess, maybe if
ghosts.
You really stretch, but yeah, I mean, I wouldn't classify it as that. I do like that scene in The Matrix. They do a good job of showing like hard versus soft styles, and the animals are well portrayed, even by actors that aren't necessarily familiar with kung fu. But anyway, that's not one of the movies we're going to talk about.
No. But so, just, I guess we've been talking about Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. And
well,
things like
that. Because that made your pet peeve list. So what's
that was one that is the easiest demonstration that most people have seen of what I'm specifically talking about.
So what would be, what's one of those that are just like really action packed that you tell people they should watch?
I think the, you know, the first one that comes to mind is one that I had you guys watch, The Legend of the Drunken Master. Which was the American version, of the sequel to the original Drunken Master from the 70s. But it was, that was kind of the movie that brought Jackie Chan into the forefront for American culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that movie There's no wire work, really. Like,
that man is insane. He actually laid on those coals. Like, what was he doing?
His old stuff is all like that. The amount of stuff he did that should have killed him is insane. I read his autobiography back when I was in, high school or junior high, whenever it came out. And he talks about, like, times he almost died. There was one scene that he fell off, like, a 20-foot building and cracked his head on a rock. That, yeah. And now he has a plate in his skull from it.
There's a movie, I don't remember what it was, but he's supposed to slide down a thing of lit up
Rush
lights.
Hour.
Yeah, that was in Rush Hour.
Yeah, it was?
Because he was still trying to do all of his own stunts at that point.
That was before he'd given up on that.
Well,
so
got to a certain
like
age where
he slides down the lights, and they were supposed to use prop lights, but they used real ones to make them pop, and he was electrocuted, and he broke both feet.
Yeah, like, and the scene looks great in the movie.
The man's insane.
Yeah, I mean, that's so funny story. I didn't know that the Legend of the Drunken Master was not actually that, and it's Drunken Master 2. I didn't know that. So,
well, it's called The Legend of the Drunken Master in America.
In America, yeah. So, but
you weren't wrong.
No, but like I was not aware that it was handled like Army of Darkness, and there was actually a movie before it that just wasn't released here originally. So I'm watching it, and I'm like, man, I feel like I'm missing some information that I should know about this guy, and I thought maybe it was lost in the translation for the subtitles or something like that. So
it might have been, because you haven't watched the first one to know whether it fills in the gaps. I have, but it's been a long time, so no, I couldn't tell you whether it fills in the gaps.
They kind of rushed the explanation of who he is and his fighting style, right? Yeah. Which is, I mean, the fighting style is obvious as you watch the movie, right? It's about drunken boxing, which is a really cool fighting style that I've always really liked. And Jackie Chan's just unreal in it. It's pretty crazy.
Midnight Pearl in chat said that Rachel wasn't talking about the scene in Rush Hour, which is possibly true. I know in Super Cop he did something similar, and
well, there's another movie he did called, I think it was just called Cops. I can't remember the details.
He's done so many movies where he did his own stunts, it's hard to say. But yeah, Rachel was probably not meaning the one in Rush Hour, because I don't remember hearing the stories about an American cinema is very different. They probably wouldn't let him do something like that.
Probably not. I don't know.
But yeah, Legend of the Drunken Master is definitely one that I wanted you guys to watch, because you get a good balance of like comedy, good characterization, and also really impressive martial arts.
Absolutely. Every single different fight was different. And I know that sounds stupid, but that was my issue with Crouching Tiger as I was watching. I felt like a lot of the choreography was repeated, so subsequent fights were not as interesting because they just lost or they repeated some stuff. And here, he makes sure that each fight is different. Each fight has a purpose. They're not just fighting because it's a martial arts film and like, yeah, let's get to the fighting. Like, it's all brought on by something story provoked.
And that's something we've talked about before is the difference between a good fight. Well, one big difference between a good fight scene and a bad fight scene is that a good fight scene will have some bearing on the story and progress it.
Absolutely.
And tell something about the characters or something during the fight scene, whereas a bad one will just be there for the sake of existing. But like, even in that movie, you start off, I think the very first fight is underneath a train car with a guy with a spear, which you're putting a spear in a super enclosed space. And managing to make a fight scene that interesting. And it's an incredible fight scene.
At the time, you don't really know who that character is. You just kind of think he's a vagrant. And, of course, Jackie Chan's character is this sarcastic, reckless, almost kid. Like, you can tell he was, like, in his late 20s, early 30s. But
he acts like a kid.
Yeah. What? He was in 1994?
Yeah, he was older, like, as an actor.
Yeah, because, I mean, the first one, the first Drunken Master was, like, 1978.
That's what I said.
I thought you were talking about the sequel that we watched.
Yeah, I was like, the character is supposed to be childish and like a kid. Like, he calls him the son and everything. But that's
okay.
What I said.
Sorry.
And
he gets it from his mom, if you see
the
movie.
Oh, yeah. I love that. And it's so well done. It goes across a field. It goes from like this little barn or shed area to underneath the train car to on top of the train to inside the train. Like, it was really impressive just how they used all the space and made it different from all the subsequent fights that we'll see.
You know, I think a second fight is when he gets challenged by the guy
at the fish market.
And yeah. So, I mean, every fight was different and was interesting and was used to progress the story. If you guys take anything away from these movies, I hope that, that you'll have just a better understanding of what a good fight scene looks like now.
I think my favorite one in Legend of the Drunken Master is actually the one that's the guys who steal his stepmom's purse.
Yeah.
Oh, right? That's a great scene.
And she gives him, you know, the alcohol. And, like,
she's like chucking him the bottles.
Yeah, yeah. He's like drinking it during the fight. And the way it's choreographed, again, it's kind of like a dance, right? But much more realistic.
So
and
I did notice that there is a different dubbing. In the version we watched, he said he drank the entire bottle and he slams it down and he says, "What is that?" And she said, "What does it mean when it says XO? Like Hennessy XO?" And in clip shows that I've seen where people reference this, like movies that talk about great movies, it says, "What does it mean when it has a skull and crossbones?"
Yeah.
Yeah. So we saw a different dubbing.
And there's definitely a different meaning between the two of those. But one of the parts, I think it was in that fight where it would have been wire work in a movie today. Mm-hmm. I think it was in that fight is when he's like drinking and he's in the chair and somebody kicks the chair out from under him.
And he's still
in the same position. Stuff like that is classic Jackie Chan and martial arts cinema. That kind of stuff would be done with wires if they even had the creativity to do that in a movie nowadays.
Oh yeah, I mean, movies are just shot differently now. Like most of it's green screen work anyway, and they'll just add stuff in post to, you know, make it look like the way they want. It's just back in, you know, this movie, the original, or The Legend of the Drunken Master was 1994, mm-hmm. right? Technology was fairly limited. The budget was pretty low.
On all the Jackie Chan movies back then, they were low.
Yeah, and so, you know, this is what I think the budget was $10 million, I think, for the entire film, which, I mean, in 94, obviously, is a lot more than today. But the fact that Jackie Chan always tried to do it all himself, have it be real, and no matter how, I mean, it would take a lot of tries sometimes, right? Like the nice thing about this one is at the end of the movie, they showed some outtakes.
They do that with almost all the old Jackie Chan movies, and it's always great. Not always great, because some of them is when he gets really hurt, but it is interesting to see how much they screwed up, and that's, I'm sure, just a fraction.
And I appreciate that he doesn't mind the world seeing that. That, I mean, maybe it makes it more real because you can see him trying to do it and how hard that is, but he also doesn't shy away from showing you that even he has to sometimes try a bunch to get something down, you know.
Right.
But
he tells a story about when he was just doing stunt work, and I can't remember what Bruce Lee movie he was in, but it might have been Enter the Dragon. He was like an extra stuntman in that movie, and Bruce Lee whacked him in the face with an Eskrima stick or a Kali stick, like a short stick, and like smashed his nose. And after the scene was over, like, Bruce Lee came over to him and was like, "I'm so sorry, are you okay?" And he tells a story. It's really great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got my nose broken by Bruce Lee.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, supposedly he took just a big shot to the face from it. And so that sounded really dirty. But yeah, it was.
It is kind of amazing how he's been able to hold up. Like, he's part cyborg now.
Yeah, he has probably more screws in him than a lot of cars do at this point.
I mean, he is the super cop.
He is. Wow. But he didn't seem like a real super cop in that movie, if you've ever seen it.
So if I wanted to continue watching Jackie Chan movies, where should I go? Because I want to, like, I was a children of the 90s. I saw, like, Shanghai Nights, and I saw Rush Hour. Like,
and those were kind of later movies for him. It kind of depends. It depends if you like more like The Legend of the Drunken Master or more like Rush Hour.
No, I would want to see more of the legend kind of stuff.
There was a movie called Who Am I that was kind of right in between when he got really popular in America and kind of his roots. That was really good. Super Cop is one of the classics for him.
I think it was Fist of Fury that he got hurt in.
It might have been, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't realize he was an extra in that.
Yeah. It was one. I don't remember. Didn't remember which movie it was, but
yeah, I think it was that.
people always ask him if he met Bruce Lee, and so that's the story he always tells.
That's a funny story.
But yeah, Jackie Chan was great. Classic. One of the classics. I don't hope he's around for a long time, but I somehow doubt based on the amount of abuse he's taken.
Well, yeah, you live a life that hard. It's possible you're going to die a little bit younger than maybe you should. However, rich people live longer. They have more money to invest in their health. So it could go either way. We don't know.
And Jackie Chan was probably, between him and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the ones that got me into really into martial arts. And I started taking martial arts around the time he started getting popular in America. So
that makes sense.
Yeah. So you guys, we already mentioned Ip Man, and I know Derek wanted to talk about that. Donnie Yen. You guys were familiar with him, but I don't know if you'd ever seen much of his like lead roles in movies.
Probably not, because he's usually a side character in a lot of stuff, and he's a crossover actor. He's of course Chinese. And very popular in Chinese films, but he's been doing work in America for years. So I had seen him.
Not a lot
in
of starring roles,
stuff.
But
right. But yeah, like he was just in Rogue One, and his kid convinced him to do it. He wasn't going to do a Star Wars film, and his kid was like, "No, you totally should."
Yeah, yeah, and he was great. We all really appreciated him in that movie.
He should have been a
one
Jedi.
Of the standouts of that movie. But I think Ip Man is a good way to be kind of introduced to him in a starring capacity. It was a very good role for him. Mm-hmm. I don't think he necessarily has as much range as a lot of other actors, but I think that the role that he was given as Ip Man was very good for him, because it's supposed to be a very stoic individual, and I think that worked out. It's kind of like when Arnold Schwarzenegger took the Terminator and he had to play a robot. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a big stretch for him. And I think Donnie Yen, based on the interviews and stuff I've seen, this is very similar to his real life personality. So it was definitely a great role for him. I know you really appreciated that movie, Derek.
That movie's awesome.
It was incredibly well done. It was almost like Schindler's List with some fight scenes in it. Like, it was heartbreaking and a huge connection on a just human soul level.
So I heard a couple of people make that comparison, and I think it's different because he's one of the persecuted people.
What do you mean a couple people? I was just comparing like war film to war film. Like,
I've heard some people make that direct comparison between those two films.
Well, that's the first time I've ever said it, so it wasn't me.
I know. That's why I said I've heard a couple of people.
All right, move on.
I was trying to. Anyway, I think it's really interesting because, so they're both based on real people, right? But what's really interesting here is that, you know, Master Ip is one of the people who are being persecuted, whereas Schindler is in a position of privilege, and he has the ability to help the group of persecuted people.
I was just mainly making this not because it's like World War II time, not because never mind. Go the fuck on. You look very displaced.
It's all good.
No,
let's move
fine.
On from that conversation.
Go ahead.
So, I thought the movie was fantastic. It's probably the best overall martial arts film I've ever seen. I'm not saying that it necessarily has like the best fight scene or anything like that, but overall, across the board, from the story, the characters, the choreography, just all of it packaged together made a martial arts film that I was more engaged in and cared more about than any other martial arts film I can think of. Which, I mean, you know, like we've said, there are some martial arts films that are really just about the fighting, and that's fine, right? Like, there's some great fight scenes in some of those movies, you know, and movies like Rush Hour and
Shanghai Nights.
Which one was the first
Shanghai
one?
Shanghai Noon. I don't know. One of those.
Whatever the first one was. Second one wasn't good. Yeah. You know, were fun, but those are not, you know, cinematic masterpieces or anything. This is just really outstanding. And I was really disappointed to hear from people that the follow-up films, because there are several, are not very good, because I would like to see more of Donnie Yen in this role and see his character continue and what happens later in his life. I just found it very compelling.
I think that you could watch the second one. You'd probably enjoy it, as long as you realize that it's not going to be the same. It's not the same as the first one. Because of the success of the first one, they kind of... So Master Ip in real life was the founder of Wing Chun and a trainer of Bruce Lee, one of the people that taught Bruce Lee. And the most interesting part of his life is what they showed in the movie. Yeah. So when they wanted a sequel, because that did so well, they started having to go a little crazy with the things that they wanted to do. And they had to, of course, go, oh, well, he trained Bruce Lee. Maybe we should get into that. And so there's a lot of, it's not as good as the first one. It's still enjoyable. And there's still, I think the second one still has some good fight scenes in it. But they start to do more wire work and things like that, less realism. And then the third one, I'm pretty sure, is where Mike Tyson comes in and it's just starts to go off the rails. It's very much like Die Hard, like where he gets more and more outrageous every time. And so that's disappointing. But take it on its own. Some of the things that I really like about that movie and are really good introductions to kind of the martial arts genre. And I'm not going to imply that you guys haven't seen these things before in other martial arts movies. But if this was the first time you've seen them, you get to see that time period, which is very popular for those movies. Jet Li's Fearless is another one of my favorites that is takes place in the same time period. You get to see basically Americans as the antagonists in all these movies, or like Easterners, like it could be European, anybody like that kind of coming in and being the bad guys. You get to see the kind of trope now of where the good guy is in like a kung fu gi and the person that's the bad guy is wearing like a taekwondo or karate gi, which they're very different.
Yeah. Well, because this one's very much like Chinese versus Japanese.
It is, yeah. Right. But then you get to see like some Americans and, you know, they're always on the bad side and they aren't the fighters or anything like that. But they're always kind of like the bad people above the, you know, fighters, whatever. Yeah, you get to see like the fights on the stage. Like there's always like a stage in the middle of the town.
Yeah.
That's where people go to throw down.
I did think that the center, so to speak, that had all of the different schools kind of together, mm-hmm. was a really neat
thing. It was very cool.
I had never really seen that before. And I mean, obviously I don't know how real that is, but it was really neat though to see like there's all these different masters and they specialize in different things. Right. And you can learn from their schools, and I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, and then you get to also progress with that by seeing a challenger come in who takes on each different style and defeats them. And one of the things I like that they do a lot of times in movies like this is they have very opposing styles go against each other. You get a very soft style like Wing Chun or Kung Fu versus a very hard style like karate or taekwondo or, you know, something that's a lot less finesse and a lot more just straight up striking. And they get to do a lot of that. They get a lot of weapon work in that part, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Rachel, what did you think of that whole scene when they were all the different schools were training in the courtyard and they had the challengers come in?
Well, I thought that it was effective for the story because basically it proved that the teachers weren't scam artists, but they definitely, they're like a lot of people we know where people get good at something and then decide they're going to start charging other people to pass on their goodness instead of their greatness or their excellence. And,
a lot of times they stick their heads in the sand and don't realize what's going on around them. Exactly. And maybe they're not.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with passing on goodness or getting paid for your knowledge. I have no issue with that. The teachers weren't in the wrong. It's just eventually you do get put in your place if you're only ever good, if you never get to greatness. And I think that was the only issue I had with the entire movie was that challenger character, because, you know, at no point they introduce him twice as this minor antagonist to Ip Man. And they never give him like some sort of redemption to the other side or even wrap up his story.
His whole character was just to show how good Ip Man was.
Exactly. Yeah. He pops up at the beginning and he pops up later on at the factory. And that factory scene was really impressive, and getting everybody involved again was fun to see. So I'm glad that he was brought in for those two times. But other than those two scenes, he was kind of pointless. And you could have easily substituted it for a Japanese character, because you're clearly painting them as the bad guys. They could have been the bad guys throughout the whole thing. It didn't have to be this Chinese on Chinese, but I get it. I get it.
Yeah, it was almost like they were trying to come up with an excuse to show how sometimes, like, we're our own worst enemy. Like, you know, the Japanese are like the black and white bad guys in this movie, but the other antagonist is more of like the, well, he's one of our own and he's still mistreating our own people kind of thing. And I just don't think it landed.
Yeah.
You know?
But the scene like we got with him, we get the scene we get with him in, when he challenges Master Ip in his house, in the middle of a fight, the kid rolls around in the tricycle, and they both respectfully stop, which I thought was great. But then you also get the kind of trope of martial arts, a lot of martial arts movies where the master uses some innocuous object as a weapon and defeats the person with a real weapon.
Yeah.
And so embarrasses them. There's an old story about Master Musashi, I think it was his name. He used a boken, which is a wooden training sword, to fight other samurai that were, I'm probably massacring this story, but it's one I heard a long time ago, that he would fight other samurai that would use a katana or a real sword, and he would beat them with a wooden training sword, hitting them with the back of it and things like that to mm-hmm. just embarrass them. And I think that from a lot of these movies take those elements of history and try and incorporate them. And I thought like using the feather duster or whatever that was great, and just whipping the guy across the face, because you could feel that really sting. And, you know,
well, the best part about that is that later on when he's in the dojo and he demolishes 10
of the best fight scenes like, of any movie,
he doesn't hold back at all. He's not trying to embarrass or teach a lesson or just get them to admit defeat. He would kill these people. Like, yeah. And so I think that was just really good characterization. At the beginning, he likes to spar. He enjoys it. He's having fun with it, much to the detriment of his wife and son, but he likes it. And he doesn't have any intentions of actually hurting anybody. And then you see him not hold back, and he can just take on almost that entire dojo. He could. And we almost get to see him take on like 30, 40 men. And it was just, I think that was a really great payoff, because you start with the feather duster and then you end up with like rapid punches to the face. And yeah. That guy is just fucked.
Yeah, and you really feel the hits too. That's one thing they did really well in that fight scene, is every hit has some weight to it, and a lot of fight scenes miss that.
Mm-hmm.
There was one point in that fight scene, yeah, a lot of the people's criticism is when a martial arts master is fighting groups of people that they all go in one at a time. Well, in that fight scene, there's at one point four of them trying to hit him at once, all in front of him, and he is deflecting across all these guys, which probably not, that didn't happen in real life, I'm sure, but it was a really well done scene because they kind of tackle that head on, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of the fight he is just fighting one-on-one, but then they flip that and have four people attack him at once, and it works really well. That whole scene is, like I said, one of my favorite and probably one of the best fight scenes.
It was incredible. Period. It was really well
definitely done. Like one of the best Donnie Yen fight scenes.
The whole thread of like being asked to fight Japanese soldiers is,
to get a bag of rice,
like
how humiliating!
I feel like we could have an entire conversation about just that concept, right? And I can't remember the character's name, but the guy who's the translator, essentially, right? That, you know, Ip
that goes out and finds the people.
You know, and like, I mean, you know, there's a lot of parallels to different things that happen in history for that. That, you know, It's weird. It's on one hand, it's interesting to see that it happens in like every culture, but it's also really sad that it happens in every culture, right?
Oh yeah, since the dawn of humanity, we've been around for 200,000 years, and if somebody has power, they will sit back, enjoy it, and make people fight. You know, we've seen this in other films. It's the whole premise of Gladiator and Spartacus. And, you know, we saw just recently in Django Unchained where Candy has two of his slaves fight each other for his amusement. Like, it's a sign of degradation and humiliation and just using your power to, humiliate, like, just.
Well, that's, I mean, I absolutely agree with you. I was more talking about the translator, though.
Oh, right.
Protecting himself by basically throwing all of his own people under the bus. You know.
Oh, you're totally right. So
that I'm blanking on right now. You know, but it's something that we've seen in a lot of different historical stuff.
So right? Yeah, just taking that scene, we could do an entire like piece on how many times we've seen this in cinema.
Because it's one of those things where it's almost like, yeah, you can hate that guy even more than like the general who's making everybody fight, because the general is just the bad guy. But the translator is one of your own who you used to consider a friend and maybe even, you know, family in some cases. And here he is basically, you know, being a traitor. That almost is worse, you know?
Yeah, it's painful to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now he gets to kind of redeem himself, you know, at the end and everything like that. And, yeah, I don't want to, you know, go into like too many spoilers or stuff for people who haven't seen it, but we should probably talk about some other movies though.
Yeah, we've only really covered two martial arts actors at this point. What other movies did you guys watch prepare for this that you would like to talk about?
So I made Derek watch my favorite martial arts movie. This movie is probably in my top 10 films of all time. I've seen this movie so many times. I saw it in theaters.
Now I'm curious what it is.
I watch it about once a year, so I insisted that we watch this movie. And that's Kung Fu Hustle.
Oh, okay.
I adore that film. I think the fight choreography is impressive. Stephen Chow is a beast. And he directed a really funny and genuinely heartfelt Kung Fu movie. And when I purchased it on home video after it came out, I was really upset that most of the critics were like, enjoyable, you know, Looney Tunes meets Kung Fu. And I was like, you are so underselling it. Like, that is not what this is at all. This is, yeah, like, yeah, the comedy is a little outrageous at times. And, but he, I thought it was fun because you talked about how the use of wires and CGI in this fight's really, it lessens it for you. Whereas here, he just goes to the extreme. And when you go to the extreme and it's used like this, I think it enhanced the story. So
it was like used for the absurdity of it.
Right? You're right.
Like, kind of like the opposite to Crouching Tiger. Like, it was a creative choice, but for the complete opposite reason. It was to make it seem
it was supposed to be. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it's really fun. Really, there's only one aspect of the movie I didn't care for, and that was the bad guys who can play the music, and the music becomes
weapons.
That's weird,
because that's basically my favorite part of the whole movie.
See, I liked watching the martial arts choreography. I liked watching the fights. I thought that was really interesting. The characters were cool. And then these two weirdos show up out of nowhere and kill everybody while they're sitting down. And just, like, one guy's killed from, like,
the behind. Yeah, the coolie, like, is killed from the behind. Who was also in It Man. He played Lin.
There you go.
That
turned me off. The rest of the movie I loved.
So I talked about it when we talked about Scott Pilgrim. One of the things I really like in movies is physical manifestations of sound and music.
I love that.
And I think that I understand what you're saying about it, but I thought that this film handled that really well. And it was more of like legends of, you know, martial arts. You could channel your chi into, you know, physical manifestations, and I think that's kind of the direction they were playing off of this, using the music to kind of channel their inner energy. And yeah, it was kind of lame that it killed off all the characters, but I did like the way it was handled. I like it when people attack with music, bards in D&D, you know, that whole
concept,
thing.
I think it's a contextual thing for me, because like in Scott Pilgrim it's great, but that whole movie is about music, right? And in D&D's context, I know that bards use music and limericks and things like that, right? But I guess maybe I wasn't ever aware of that kind of like mythology in martial arts being a thing, so it just seemed like so disconnected for me. My own ignorance, maybe.
It was a bummer that character got killed off so fast. He was taken by surprise when they could have easily like done the cat scene, and you watch the music play and all the shadows. There are leaves that get cut, a pot that gets cut, and then a cat gets decapitated just in the shadows, and then the coolie's head is cut off. And so it would have been cool to see him fight again, because him, the tailor, and the noodle guy, I think was his name, a donut. Them all fighting together was really great. But Stephen Chow's insanely good.
The, probably the best part of the movie. The one thing I appreciate about that movie is that the martial arts was kind of Looney Tunes-y, but it was based in real stuff. One of the things in that movie was the guy that used the staff. He used an actual waxwood staff that flexes and things like that. And in a lot of these movies, they're using like a broomstick, which is not at all what a staff was when a martial artist started using a staff. It was waxwood and it did flex. And a lot of the movements are made to utilize that. Mm-hmm. And he actually did use a waxwood staff. And I thought that was great. And the same with the guy with the metal rings on his arm. That's thing. I don't remember what it's called, but that's.
Every single character had a different kind of martial arts that they were using, or it just a small specialty. Like I know most of it was kung fu based,
right.
But they all just had really fun specialties, and I like that they again went to the absurd and created their own superpower, like the lion's roar and the frog.
The scene when the guy's like picking out the guys out of the crowd is one of my favorite comedy scenes ever, like of any movie outside of martial arts or whatever. That's one of my favorite. I go watch that on YouTube like once every few months just because it's hilarious. You shrimpy, come up here. Oh, that's cheating. Sit back down. You old man. And it's like this dude's totally jacked. Like, it was so good.
Stephen Chow is very underrated, and he's a talented martial artist.
Shaolin Soccer was as good. It's enjoyable, but it wasn't anywhere near. I think Kung
it was
Fu
about
Hustle
three or four years later, or 3 or 4 years earlier. So he definitely matured and wrote a better script for Kung Fu Hustle. Shaolin Soccer's fine. It's fine.
It's not as good as Kung Fu Hustle. It's not, unfortunately.
So another kind of lighthearted film that I just want to mention for people, because this is one that I had completely missed until recently, and Donnie Yen is in it and Jackie Chan is in it, and it's Forbidden Kingdom, or The Forbidden Kingdom.
Jet Li. Donnie Yen's not in it.
That's Jet Li.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry.
It's okay.
I wrote it down. It is Jet Li. My bad.
So that was a total American film.
Totally American
and
film.
And like the Michael Ang something.
We're not going to be let this be the only film we talk about with Jet Li. Like, we're going to have to do a part two of this, because
absolutely
that's far from his best work.
Jet Li is insanely great, and there's really only one bad movie he made, and it's the one where he has to fight all the other universes.
That wasn't his fault.
That wasn't his fault.
Everything he did in that movie was good.
The movie was bad. He was fine in a bad movie. But this is just a cute kids movie, and I maintain it's a kids movie because that same guy did like Sky High maybe 3 months earlier or so.
Yeah, and they really pushed when this movie came out. A lot of people that were fans of martial arts movie were really looking forward to it because they really leaned on Jet Li and Jackie Chan being in the same movie, because these are two martial artists that at this point had crossed over into American cinema.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And everybody pretty much knew who they were. So having them in the same movie was a big deal. And then it was kind of waste. I mean, it was fine. It wasn't great.
Their fight scene when they first
meet in the temple
is so great.
It's pretty cool.
I love that scene.
Their scenes were really great. It was more about the American kid, which was slightly disappointing, because you have these two great martial artists, and you could remove that kid white savior storyline and you'd have almost a 10 times better film, in my opinion. So it was to reach out to American audiences. It was to definitely show for a younger age. So yeah, I would totally show this to my kids. If I had any, I don't, but I would. And maybe this would spark their interest in martial arts. This is a jumping off point for Americans and for children, I think.
Sure.
I like the magical aspects of it.
I love the fantasy.
The fact that the silent monk is part of the Monkey King, I thought was really cool. Because they look the same. They're both played by Jet Li, but like, when you're first watching it, you're not sure if that's on purpose or not, like, or if he just played two roles, because actors do that sometimes, but it actually is part of the story, right? Same with Jackie Chan, who plays the old man in the beginning. It's not just they were just playing multiple roles because they were there. It's actually very important. I liked those aspects of it, and I didn't really like the kid. He's definitely like the worst part of the movie.
By far, yeah.
I liked that it was kind of bookended, like, never ending story for me. It was a little nostalgic, you know, because there's those parallels of the kid from Never Ending Story is bullied too, and then he learns how to be tough, and then he can fight back against the bullies, right? Like, it's almost the exact same 3-point arc for the two characters. Mm-hmm. So that was just kind of cute, but yeah, that
kind of like Kung Fu Panda, same thing, except that you didn't get the book. You get like a kid reading a book, but you get Kung Fu Panda has the same story.
Kung Fu Panda is fantastic. It? Yeah. I don't remember. So what you've recommended Fearless to us in the past.
Yeah. So we're going to do a part two of this. Right. And it might be like 5 years from now, based on
our
current
record. But what other Jet Li movies would you recommend?
We're going to talk about Fearless. I'm going to make you guys watch that one way or another. If I have to buy the Blu-ray.
Sweetheart,
so you guys watch
I already
it.
Agreed to it. Calm your tits.
It was on our list, and then it got taken off the free streaming service, and we were trying not to buy too many of
these. And to be fair, Rachel has said she really did want to see that. So that one, I'm still like, I'm really having to push you guys to see that. Romeo Must Die.
So Romeo Must Die is incredibly important for like one reason. That is the first time in American cinema where an Asian man, Eastern Asian man and a black woman were paired together as a couple. It had never happened before. It was Aaliyah and Jet Li.
So I'm pretty sure I've seen that movie, actually.
Okay. Well, you'll watch it again, and this time you'll have something to watch for in it.
Yeah. But I didn't know that. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm.
So those are two good Jet Li movies that we'll probably be talking about in the next one. I'd like to say, Romeo Must Die, it's fine. It's not the greatest. Sorry, in chat they said Romeo Must Die is not good. And... you know, I like it, and maybe it's not that great of a movie, but I like Jet Li is kind of charming in a weird way in it, and Aaliyah is very charismatic. And
Aaliyah was
fun
a fantastic actress. I think she's a better actress than she was a rapper, but that's my
I enjoyed the movie, and the martial arts in it is good. You get to see some weaponry that I would like to talk about in it that isn't utilized in cinema a lot. So that's the main reason for that one, Midnight Pearl, if you're going to go call me out like that.
Well, in all fairness, we also did an entire podcast episode on the movie Hero. And that director has a ton of martial arts movies that I really like. I really like House of Flying Daggers, and I really like Curse of the Golden Flower. And then just last year, he did a movie called Shadow, which... I think was up for a foreign Oscar. So like I haven't seen it yet, but I want to. So like
these are more martial arts movie Jet Li movies rather than artistic Jet Li movies.
If you are interested in our thoughts on Hero, that was episode 128.
Yeah.
Another martial artist that I think we'll talk about on the next one, if I can get you guys to watch the movies, is Tony Jaa.
Yes. I've been wanting to watch Ong Bak since I was...
The Protector is a big one. He's not in a lot of movies. He was, I think, in one of the Expendables movies, which is interesting. But so that'll be... We'll probably talk about Ong Bak and maybe go into a little bit more with Bruce Lee. Since we didn't get to talk about
okay,
him much
so
this time.
We had a lot of trouble trying to get into Fist of Fury. Is there another Bruce Lee movie
Enter
you
the
recommend?
Dragon.
Yeah,
is
that's
classic.
The one that got where he died on set, right? And they
Enter
had
the Dragon.
To...
No.
I thought that was the one with.
Is that not the one with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
Yeah, and they had to scrap it together. Like, he died during, not on set, excuse me.
I'm pretty sure that he died during production.
Maybe it was. I didn't think it was, but maybe it was. But that's a great movie. A great Bruce Lee movie.
That
so,
I've
and
seen.
One of the classics.
I have not.
Yeah,
you could watch the one with him versus Chuck Norris.
Pass.
But that's really the only good part of that movie. And even that is debatable whether that's that good. The fight scene itself is good. But there's like...
Enter the Dragon was his last film.
Okay, yeah, then it was. There's like 4 minutes of them like cracking their backs and like stretching before and then like a weird close up of a cat. that's a weird scene. But yeah, Enter the Dragon is a classic Bruce Lee movie. Okay. So that would probably, if I had to recommend one, that would be what it is.
All right, so we're gonna do some more Jackie Chan films. We're gonna watch Fearless. We're gonna watch Ong Bak, and we're gonna watch Enter the Dragon for our martial arts episode number 2. I'm gonna space this out about a couple months, but I really want to keep
take
on
the
this.
Time you guys need. It's not in a huge rush or anything,
right?
So.
Like they're not fresh movies. Right. We're not here with the hot takes.
But it
right.
has been nice having a good pressure to watch them, because I like these kinds of movies, but I tend to
have any reason to watch them.
Well, I mean, it's not that. The reason is because I want to and I like them. It's more of just they get pushed aside for the more topical stuff.
Well, this at the minimum is three movies, probably four if we throw in another old Jackie Chan movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, you'll have some. That's four movies in 2 months. I mean, for you guys is a lot for as extra homework. Yeah, well, you know what I mean? Because you see a lot of movies already, so... I think that's not too crazy, but
and I think this is how we should kind of do our fill our holes. Maybe from now on, you know, we focus on a genre. We each come up with a list of like six movies. Maybe we've seen some, maybe we haven't, and then we just have a big discussion about them later.
When you guys were asking me what movie I wanted to pick,
yeah.
I had at least two ideas, and they were both martial arts movies. And I was like, well, nice. We're getting ready to do a martial arts review, so I'm not going to pick those because that would ruin it. But
have you picked? Because that's next week's
No,
topic.
We're doing something else, I thought.
Are we?
Yeah.
Did we change next
week? I don't know. We'll figure it out. Stay tuned.
Oh, man. Okay.
But, yeah, so I didn't want to do two martial arts weeks in a row. You know,
right.
I wanted to. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway,
you all have to watch Rock-a-Doodle.
I don't even know what that is.
How dare you!
I've seen it. It's the animated one about the
Chanticleer.
Chanticleer
the rooster.
Yeah.
Who loses his memory and lives on a farm.
I've seen it.
I love it.
But I mean, it's been
a
while.
It's
and
a
no,
Don
we're not
Bluth
watching.
Film.
We're not reviewing that.
We're
Derek.
Not
don't
reviewing Rock-a-Doodle.
I don't remember that one. I like Don Bluth films. I don't remember that one.
I vaguely remember it. It was something.
I loved it. Rock-a-doodle,
rock-a-doodle,
rock-a-doodle. Had a theme song.
That's
I
the theme
it.
Song, Derek.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's more lyrics to it.
There's more words, but yeah, that's basically
there's
it.
There's more words and notes and things.
Yeah. But that's the exact dance. This is what you miss when you're just doing the audio version, guys.
I know, right? All right. So anything else we want to cover then?
No.
Are we good?
No, I think that's a good wrap. We talked a lot of films, so we've got recommendations for next time, and look out for our part two episode. We'll put it on the schedule here soon.
So I'm gonna plug real quick.
How dare
Spellbound,
you?
Which is a brand new show here on the Heroes Podcast Network, hosted by Ray.
Me.
And the first three episodes are out right now.
They are.
They cover Good Omens, the series Good Omens, with guest Zach, who's been on the show before here.
Yes.
But I also wanted to plug it because the episode that should be coming out tomorrow for people who are listening to this when it comes out will be the first part of your Dark Crystal discussion.
With Ryan!
Wait, when is that one coming out?
Friday.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah.
Guess we better record the second part of that pretty soon, huh?
Yeah. So I just, you know, I think we plugged a promo earlier in the episode about that, so I'm not going to spend any more time. I just wanted to plug that you're both going to be doing it this coming week. So
that's right.
Yeah.
We really
Absolutely.
Go deep.
Are you excited, Ray, about your new show?
I am having a lot of fun with it. Screen Heroes is absolutely wonderful, but sometimes due to our time constraints and our overabundance of content, we don't get to really dig deep into some of these series. And that was my goal with Spellbound, is just to dig deep. And I really wanted to review all the upcoming fantasy shows on streaming networks, and I get to do it. So
there you go.
That's it. That's my show.
All right, take us out.
All right, guys. If you want to follow us individually, you can follow Ryan at Buster Props on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can follow Derek at The Star Trek Dude on the exact same platforms, and me, Siren Ray, on the exact same platforms. You can follow The Heroes Podcast at heroespodcast.com for all of our shows. We have, what, six now? Five?
Well, five, Red Shirts and Runabouts is on hiatus, so there's five or six currently. So there's six shows, five are currently running.
There we go. You can follow the individual podcasts all on Twitter. They all have their own individual handles. Ours is at Screen Heroes Pod. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
All that good stuff.
And lastly, we do have a Patreon. We do appreciate any help that you can throw at us. Every little bit helps.
And if you just want to throw it at me and it's money, that's fine too. We can arrange something.
Derek will strip for cash. So if you throw cash at him, if you throw cash at him, he'll take off a sock.
That goes up. That goes against Twitch's user policies.
Only if you showed Ding Dong.
I don't know. I haven't read them that specifically.
You can tease some sideball or something.
If you show your hot dog, then we're in trouble.
That's right.
Okay. Fair enough.
But if you show your little tootsies, you'll be fine.
That's right. There's a lot of people that pay a lot of money to see tootsies online.
Those are feet, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, toes specifically, not just feet.
So not my feet. You can just see my toes.
All right, guys. We'll catch you next week. Join us on Twitch every Tuesday for live video and conversation. And listen every Thursday for the podcast. Okay. I'm out. Mic drop. Rock-a-doodle, rock-a-doodle. Oh, you're still recording. I thought you had stopped.